You guys know I'm crazy about Audible because it offers an incredible selection of audiobooks across every genre. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, including the latest bestsellers and new releases. Audible really is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment, with female writers and heroines, celebrity narration, multicast productions with immersive sound design, and traditional audiobooks. Audible has you covered for any type of excitement that you're looking for. In fact, right now I'm listening to The Second Husband by Kate White. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/realitylife or text realitylife to 500-500. That's audible.com/realitylife or text realitylife to 500-500. With four daughters and two on a dance team, I can tell you we go through a lot of mascara in my house. But I'm crazy about L'Oreal Paris new Panorama Mascara, which catches every lash from corner to corner for maximum volume. If you're looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank, this is yours. The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. I've been using it for about 2 weeks now, and I feel like my eye has completely opened up, and the girls are crazy about it too. They've got a tapered brush to catch every lash, one of the best mascara wands that I've ever used. And like I said, this luxe appearance of this gold package, you got to get it. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today. L'Oreal Paris new Panorama Mascara, you're going to love it.
The amazing Kate Casey.
Welcome back to another episode of Reality Life with Kate Casey. Hope that you're having a great week so far. Have you been watching Winning Time, The Rise of the Lakers Dynasty on HBO Max? This is a highly anticipated original sports drama series that brings fans closer to the team that defined an era both on and off the court. I know I usually talk about unscripted TV, but I mean, this really is about a true story. Throughout its 10 episodes, Winning Time gives an in-depth look into the professional and personal lives of the legendary 1980s Los Angeles Lakers, with special focus on portraying the key figures, including Jerry Buss, Magic Johnson, Jerry West, Pat Riley, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and Jeannie Buss. This series is fantastic if you love all sports stories. It reminds me of The Last Dance that went behind the scenes of the Bulls championship season because of all the personal stories of the athletes. But in this case, it's a scripted series. I mean, it's shot really interesting. It's almost like a blurry look to it, like a nostalgic blurry look, but also they break the fourth wall. So prepare yourself for that because it's a little bit different than other series that you may be watching. However, I mean, the stories are insane. For example, the opening scene has Jerry Buss at the Playboy Mansion, and there's like a lot going on in the scene. Let me just tell you this. Don't have your kids in the room when you start to watch this. So basically, I'm starting to feel like my worlds are colliding because having interviewed the director of Secrets of Playboy and Jennifer Saginaw, whose father, Mark, was Hugh Hefner's personal doctor, it's all coming full circle because Jerry, as I mentioned, is in the Playboy Mansion in that opening scene. And you just think of all the great stories that have to do with the Lakers in that era. And then the opening scene too, one of the opening scenes is Magic Johnson getting the news that he's HIV positive. So I think that if you love sports, if you know someone who loves sports, this is a great conversation starter. And it's going to be every week. So it gives you like, you know, when you want something to look forward to every week, I recommend it. Again, it's on HBO Max. And HBO Max, by the way, if you're asking yourself, Kate, should I spend money on another streaming service? You have to have HBO. You know what I mean? Like there are ones that you just have to have. Netflix, HBO, Hulu. They're ones that are just, there's no question about it. You've got to have it. HBO and HBO Max are absolutely fantastic. And there's a ton of great content on there. You will not regret it, I promise you. And this is on HBO Max. Winning Time, The Rise of the Lakers Dynasty. Also, Netflix's newest trending show is actually a show I've been obsessed with since last year. It's actually in its second season. It's called The Parisian Agency. So imagine a show that combines the luxurious properties of Real Housewives with decor that you'd see in the pages of Architectural Digest. And with it is a family. And in one of the world's most beautiful and expensive cities and with clients with deep pockets. The Kretzes are a family of seven. There's Olivier and Sandrine, and they have four sons. They are Martin, Valentin, Louis, and Raphael. And the children's grandmother is Mojo. So the family, with the exception of Mojo and Raphael, who's still in school, run Kretz and Partners, a luxury real estate agency that deals in some of the most stunning properties that France has to offer. And so in each episode, you get to see the Kretzes with their clients, some friends exploring properties and then jumping back into their lives. So they all work together in the parents' home, which happens to look like a museum with beautiful artwork. And you want to be part of the Kretz family and you want to live in Paris. And even though it's subtitled and you're asking yourself, can I stay the course? You can. Because you, like myself, will start to imagine yourself being able to speak French fluently. I'm telling you, I was like, d'accord. It's crazy. So in this episode, I explore that show more with Jordan Ross Myers from Pretty Corrupt Lawsuit. He's the guy behind the Lee Raswell and Don Gumbelson Twitter accounts that make you laugh so hard. And we also touch a little bit on this week's reunions in Real Housewives, Salt Lake and Miami. Jordan and his co-host Stacey are two of my favorite people to text during a TV show. I mean, like, you fall over laughing. So I was eager to hear what he thought about the Parisian agency because I know how much he enjoys luxury properties on TV. Also in this episode is an interview with Rory Kennedy about a documentary on Netflix. I am a huge fan of Rory Kennedy. She makes incredible documentaries. In 2018 and 2019, two different Boeing 737 MAX flights crashed in eerily similar circumstances. They killed 346 people and sparked a deluge of news coverage, a congressional investigation, and a $2.5 billion Department of Justice settlement. Reporting and the congressional investigation, whose results were released in September of 2020, eventually argued in part that in the face of increased competition, Boeing hastened the development of the 737 MAX and did not disclose important information to the Federal Aviation Administration and pilots about the model of the plane. This is the subject of the Netflix documentary, Downfall, The Case Against Boeing. This documentary, as mentioned, was directed by Rory Kennedy. She is the daughter of Robert F. Kennedy. And it links the work environment and priorities at Boeing following its 1997 merger with McDonnell Douglas. The merger allegedly led to a priority of money over safety, and it argues that it led to the fatal crashes mentioned earlier, like concealing major changes from previous models from pilots and the FAA. This documentary includes interviews with several former Boeing workers, former Wall Street Journal aerospace reporter Andy Pastor, House Committee on Transportation Infrastructure Chair Representative Peter DeFazio, pilots, aviation experts, and family members of plane crash victims. It is a fantastic documentary. And like I said, it was a huge thrill of mine to be able to interview Rory Kennedy. This is a fantastic episode. So here we go. 2 years ago for my birthday, my friend Carlene got me the most perfect birthday gift. A Vuori jogger. Since then, it has become a staple in my wardrobe. To know me is to know I love Vuori joggers. And here's why I love it. The product is incredibly versatile. It can be used for just about any activity like running, training, swimming, yoga, but also awesome for lounging or weekend errands. You will love the way you look in all Vuori clothing. And ordering your new favorite items could not be easier. Their website will showcase all the great colors and for all of their soft and well-made clothes. And here's another reason I love it. Vuori is 100% offsetting their carbon footprint. They're also reducing and offsetting 100% of their plastic footprint from 2019 and beyond. And they are utilizing better sustainable materials for their products, empowering your best active life. And for men, know that my husband loves Vuori pants too. They're perfect for running and his go-to travel pant. Vuori is an investment in your happiness. And for my listeners, they are offering, get this, 20% off your first purchase. Get yourself some of the most comfortable and versatile clothing on the planet at Vuori.com/Kate. That's Vuori.com/Kate. Not only will you receive 20% off your first purchase, but enjoy free shipping on any US orders over $75 and free returns. Go to Vuori.com/Kate and discover the versatility of Vuori clothing. This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. If you're looking for new style inspiration, Saks.com is the place to go. Saks.com is making it easy for me to shop for the spring with their selection of chic clothes and accessories. Right now, I'm looking at Saks.com so I can find my new going out vibe. I'm looking for a breezy Zimmermann dress for an evening cocktail party. And for my upcoming conference in Los Angeles, I'm looking at bright Chloe blazers because I'm pushing myself to wear more orange and pink. Saks.com will inspire you to shop for everything on your agenda. So find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com. Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way that you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. And the best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman, and they pass the savings on to us. So I just got a 100% organic cotton tiered maxi skirt in red and a chiffon pleated midi skirt in soft pink. Now I'm going to wear both of them with either a white scoop t-shirt or a black tank top. In fact, wait, should we all get the same outfit and meet for drinks? Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/KKC for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/KKC to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/KKC. Downfall, The Case Against Boeing is a Netflix documentary which investigates the two Boeing 737 MAX crashes that killed 346 people, exploring both the root causes and the human cost. It is directed by Rory Kennedy, whom I have great respect for, and she is my guest today. Welcome to the show.
It's great to be here with you. Thank you for having me.
On October 29th, 2018, 13 minutes after Lion Air Flight 610 departed Jakarta, the Boeing 737 MAX aircraft dove nose down into the Java Sea. It killed 189 people on board. And according to the flight's data recorder, the plane had inexplicably moved up and down over 24 times before finally diving at full speed into the sea. Dennis Muilenburg, the CEO of Boeing, appeared on Fox Business a month later and said, "The bottom line here is the 737 MAX is safe, and safety is a core value for us at Boeing." But then what happened in March of 2019?
Another plane crash, same model of airplane, 737 MAX, killing everybody on board. And as one of our investigators in the film says, it was under eerily similar circumstances. And as they investigated and found the black boxes, which, as our film shows, are actually red, they discovered that it was under because of the same underlying reasons.
So two crashes, same model Boeing aircraft, but they're just really the beginning of a tale of corporate greed and our two-tiered justice system. So the issue was a faulty sensor on the aircraft triggering the Maneuvering Characteristics Augmentation System, MCAS, aircraft software that Boeing installed to help pilots keep the aircraft from stalling. Did they tell their airlines or pilots about MCAS?
Yeah, and it's also known as MCAS, the system. In the first plane crash, the pilots were totally unaware that the system was on the plane. To my knowledge, there were really no pilots outside of Boeing who were aware of this system. Basically, what happened, just to backtrack, is that Boeing was in competition with Airbus, who had just come out with a competitive airplane. Instead of building a new kind of aircraft, Boeing wanted to get to the market quicker. And so they decided to basically reboot an old model of an airplane, a 737 from the 1960s, and put modern engines on it, which were bigger and more fuel efficient. But they found when they got it up into the air that under certain circumstances, the plane would stall. So instead of rebuilding the plane, they decided they could fix it with a computer system, which is known as the MCAS, which in those circumstances would push the nose of the plane down, we later find, as you just pointed out, that that was connected to one sensor. So if that sensor was broken, hit by a balloon or bird or anything, that it would send erroneous information to that MCAS system. And what we now know they it happened in both of these airplanes is it kept pushing the nose of the plane down over and over again. And we now know as well, and the document that we show in our film shows that Boeing was aware as far back as 2016 that if the pilots didn't respond within 10 seconds and do exactly the right thing, it would be too late. They wouldn't be able to recover the airplane. It would crash and everybody on it would die.
So the two crashes result in this worldwide grounding of the aircraft for nearly 2 years. What happened in that time?
Well, they grounded the airplane and they have now made it so that the MCAS system doesn't overpower the pilots so that the pilots can always take control over it. There are ongoing concerns that many people, including pilots and family members who lost loved ones on those airplanes, have about the ongoing safety of that airplane. One of the things that happened in both of these crashes is there was an onslaught of alerts in the cockpit. So there was a stick shaker, this loud kind of clacking noise was happening. The master alarm was going on. There were a number of alarms about airspeed disagree, altitude disagree. So the pilots had to navigate all of these alerts and figure out which one to pay attention to because many of them were erroneous. And of course, they needed to do this within 10 seconds, which is, as one of our pilots says, you know, it's insane to have that expectation. So that alert system has not been updated to modern standards. So that's an ongoing concern. Another ongoing concern about the airplane is that, you know, it would have been nice to just take MCAS out off the plane, right? They would have done that if they could do it. But the plane still has this issue where the aerodynamics don't work without MCAS. So now they have two alerts that happen. And if they disagree, the MCAS system shuts off. But it shuts off, you know, in the middle of the air. And in certain circumstances, they need that system to fly, right? So it's again, feels a bit of a kind of makeshift fix.
Yeah.
And I think people also have ongoing concerns about the culture at Boeing even today.
Well, in an 18-month congressional inquiry by Peter DeFazio, he said that he found a culture of concealment wherein Boeing withheld crucial information from the FAA, its customers, and 737 MAX pilots. What to you is the most compelling part of that report?
Well, listen, you know, I think what our film documents is that there were a series of decisions that were made by Boeing that go back as far back as, well, when they decided to make this airplane, then 2013 meeting minutes where they very clearly decided to hide this MCAS system from the regulator, from the FAA. The 2016 memo that I just mentioned, where it said they needed to do pilot training in order, at least at the very least, and they resisted doing pilot training because it would cost them money to account for the fact that the pilots had to respond within 10 seconds. If you go back, the series of decisions were incentivized, arguably, by money, right?
Right.
Saving money. So, you know, I think the thing that was most damning to me, and of course, you know, there's a damning upon damning upon damming. But if you're asking me what the most damning, I would say the Tarim report that came out after the first crash. And this was a report by the FAA, the regulator, that concluded that this type of airplane, the 737 MAX, would likely crash 15 times over the course of its lifetime. That's once every 2 years, would have a catastrophic crash where everybody on the plane would die. And Boeing and the FAA made the decision after that first airplane crash to keep the airplane in the air And they were banking against human lives that they would fix the problem before another airplane crashed, knowing the likelihood of that plane going down. So when you know that, and then you talk to Michael Stumo, whose daughter was on that second plane, and he knows that, and he doesn't only have to grapple with the fact that his daughter died, that his daughter died on an airplane crash, but that on top of that, that his daughter died because people wanted at Boeing, the management at Boeing wanted to make more and more and more money. And they made that decision at the cost of not only Sam Yastumo's lives, but all of the other people on that airplane. It's, I don't even have words for that.
Boeing reaches settlement with the DOJ that for many did not deliver anything close to accountability. The DOJ agreed to prosecute the company and Boeing agreed to pay $2.5 billion in penalties and compensation. And while that might sound like a huge number to a lot of people, it is actually only 4% of the $62 billion in total revenue Boeing made in 2021. The CEO was fired in December of 2019 and left more than $60 million in pension benefits and stocks. Boeing stock, which was at a low of $95 a share in early 2020, was trading Friday at over $200 a share. What has this been like for you to tell this story and to meet all of these families?
Well, you know, I haven't met all of the families. I've met a number of the families, and I mean, the families, they're us, right? They're, you know, we all fly. And part of the reason I wanted to make this film is because I have a little bit of a fear of flying. You know, it's always slightly unreasonable to be going 500 miles an hour in this kind of metal object at, you know, 30,000 feet. And I've always trusted when I walk down that jetway that, you know, the manufacturer is going to make a safe plane. They're going to be incentivized to do so, that the FAA, the regulator, is going to make sure that, you know, that they're making good choices and ensuring the safety of all of us, that Congress is going to make sure that the regulators are empowered to do their job. And in this instance, all of those entities failed us. And I think that ultimately it's up to us, right? I mean, we have to hold these folks accountable. We have to hold these corporations accountable. And we have to hold Congress accountable and make sure we're electing people who care about these issues, who care about the public good. And it's not just sadly in this industry, but you can see it across many industries where this story is told over and over and over again.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a larger conversation about kind of correcting, and I'm all in this film, we celebrate the extraordinary accomplishments of Boeing. I mean, it's an amazing company that has this incredible history, which I admire and respect, but you know, it was taken over by a handful of executives with the McDonnell Douglas merger who really focused exclusively on making money and having this company do well. And it's, you see the results of it and it's heartbreaking.
Well, it's called Downfall, The Case Against Boeing. It is on Netflix. It's streaming right now. I want to say thank you to you and to your team. You've done a wonderful job. I'm so grateful for you bringing this to light. And I hope that everyone listens to this and tells at least four different people to go and watch it as well. Thank you, Rory, for your time.
Thanks for having me. Great talking to you.
You too. Whether you need to buy or sell, or you're just obsessed with looking at homes for sale, Redfin's got you covered. Redfin updates their listings every 2 minutes so you can see new homes first. And they give you personalized recommendations based on the homes that you like, so you can find the home that's just right for you, whether that's a cabin, a craftsman, or a castle. With the top-rated Redfin app, you can favorite homes, share listings with others, and schedule tours, and even on the same day, with a local Redfin agent who can help guide you through the whole home buying process. And if you're looking to sell, Redfin agents have the experience to get you the best price possible for your home. That's because they sell twice as many homes as other agents. With a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin's fees are half of what others often charge, which means you'll have more money to put towards what matters most to you, like your next home. In fact, last year, Redfin saved home sellers $127 million. No matter where you are in your real estate journey, Redfin can help. Download the Redfin app to get started today.
If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
Jordan Ross Myers, I have asked you to review the Parisian Agency exclusive properties. As I've told everybody, this is about the Kretz family, a family of seven. You've got Olivier and Sandrine, the parents, and their four sons, Martin, Valentine, Louis, and Raphael, and the children's grandmother, Majo. This family, with the exception of Majo and Raphael, who's still in school, also run Kretz and Partners, a luxury real estate agency that deals in some of the most stunning properties that France has to offer. What have you thought so far of this show? Because I know that you watched season one, season two has just come back. Does this make you want to move to Paris?
Yes. It's real estate porn.
Isn't it?
And something I like about it too is it's very soothing. It's non-toxic.
Yes.
Like say $1 million listing, you get those $100 million homes or whatever, but the agents are all cutthroat. This is just like this soothing family. The mom cares about their well-being more than business. And the homes are just, yeah. And the homes are gorgeous.
So do we think that of all the people touring these properties that they are really considering buying these, or are they plants a la $1 million listing? Like people pretending to buy some of those properties. Do we feel like they're for real?
I don't know. I wonder, I'm not sure what the French entertainment market is like. I mean, we know if it's like a Bravo, especially LA related show, you know, they're plants. So there it's all constructed or, what's the word? Contrived, but
absolutely contrived. Yeah. Like where you're like, there's no way that that's really a condo that they could afford. But there's sometimes I worry about that because for the Kretzes, sometimes in the second season they've been using friends. Like the first episode, mm-hmm. or maybe it's the second episode, they have, I guess it's Martin's friends that are looking at a property, and it's a couple, and they make a point of giving you their names, unlike $1 million listing. $1 million listing, someone just shows up with a fancy outfit on and they're like, this is, you know, Jeeves, and he's a big time tech executive and he's looking for a property. This one, they'll go, you know, Flavier and Maude, ages 35 and 37. I'm like, I don't know if I'd want my age up there, but okay, whatever. But you're asking yourself, could this young couple with one child pay the $4.5 million for an apartment right near Eiffel Tower? Does that run through your brain, or am I just horribly judgmental?
I was watching one last night. They're in St. Bart's. And all these, it was like a €10 million euro budget. And I think the people were in their 30s, which made me really jealous.
Exactly. God.
And this isn't their first home. And the other thought was they all flew out to St. Bart's. And I was trying to do the math on the potential commission and the expense for the trip. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I was like, how realistic is this? I don't think they're going to walk away making much money if they spend, they had like a private plane giving them a tour of the island. I mean, that's racking up tens of thousands of dollars towards this one commission.
It is something that runs through my brain, and I'm assuming other people too, because you can't imagine that someone can just think nothing of buying a second property for like $5 million. Now, are the brothers, are you worried about this like I am? The brothers are so close to their parents. Do you think that their spouses get left out? Because it's like, not only do they work together, they want to hang out together, they have lunch together. And by the way, when they make lunch, it's like prosciutto with melon. I mean, these are like over the top meals. The family's all together. If you're one of the spouses, do you become second to them?
Yeah, that's what I noticed. You're marrying into their family, and I think you have to adjust to their family. Like every time they interact, it's, oh, we'll be over for an aperitif tomorrow, or we're coming. It's a lot of family time with the Kratzes.
Well, then I was wondering about the one brother that wants to move to Lisbon, and his plans were derailed by COVID, but he wants to move with his wife to Lisbon to open up the agency's Lisbon office. But you know what? I feel like it's because Eve wants to get away from the family. What do you think? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think there's that dynamic, but I don't think you're allowed to when you're tied in with business.
Maybe not.
What do you think? Like,
well, I think it's a good effort. And maybe they said COVID derailed their plans, but really it's because Martin's like, no, I have to be with my family every day for lunch for prosciutto and melon. But Eve is like, I swear I cannot take these people anymore. We're with them every day of the week. Like, do we ever get a break?
Yeah.
Then I wondered, what if Raphael, the son, does not want to go into the family business? I mean, he mentioned playing guitar. I assume that after this experience, he wants to become a television host in Paris. Like, what do we think he's going to do with his life? Or will he ultimately just end up becoming a real estate agent?
I feel like with families like that, maybe he'll entertain those options, but eventually you go where the money is, especially when the opportunity is like laid out for you and presented. It's hard to turn down. Unless he ends up being the wayward son who like moves to Thailand or something, like totally. I don't think there's an in-between. I think either you're in the business and you're in the family core, or he'll be off somewhere in another country. And they'll see him at Christmas. I don't think he could stay in France and not join the company.
Do you think that Sandrine would have ever been like a great Real Housewife of Paris?
No, I think the family is too kind. And that, like I was saying earlier, they're not toxic. They seem nurtured. I wonder what that's like with the French real estate market too. Like,
right.
They have their own things like, will they accept a request from us to view the house? And like, there are all these protocols that I don't think go on here.
Is it possible that they're this nice?
Yeah, that's what I don't get. Like, I mean, look, we're used to Josh Flagg and Ryan Serhant, Frederick Eklund, and Tracy Tudor. I mean, like, it's aggressive here. Yeah. And on there, they make everything seem so like genteel and refined. And I mean, I don't know if it's the French way, but they don't feel like hustlers the way we have them here.
Now, when you get a peek into some of the decor, I was surprised that a lot of the homes that are sold at that huge price tag are really decorated like Kim and Kanye's house. Was that surprising to you?
I assume maybe because of like Disney or whatever. Like I see some of them and they have like those old like gilt trims and things like that. I always assume they're going to be like these little French jewel boxes.
What do you think about Ma Jo, the grandmother? Is she the Blanche Devereaux of Paris?
I love that. Yeah. I think it's great when they have an older character who adds some, spice to the show.
And do you think that she tags along sometimes with the sales presentations? And if she does so, is she the linchpin? Is she going to close the deal for everybody?
I think she has the charm to get people in the family, the agents, they play like the straight people, all mellow. And then I think she gets them like up and excited.
So what would you say to anyone that's kind of perusing Netflix and comes across this? Why should they stay the course and watch it?
I got it. First of all, it's real estate porn like you haven't seen on even... it's like the Barefoot Contessa meets Million Dollar Listing.
Oh my God, yes. Yes, absolutely. And like we've mentioned, it looks like they actually care about each other, which is something you never see on a Bravo network. So I agree with you. Okay.
Yeah, this is like a lifestyle.
Yes. Great. A lifestyle.
Soothing.
It's like taking a private jet into a world where people can just buy a beautiful home with a pool and think nothing of it. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about Salt Lake City. They had a reunion on Sunday. It was the second part. We were texting last night about Lisa Barlow. Why do you think this was shift-making in the history of Salt Lake, this particular part of this reunion? Has Lisa's status on the show been forever changed as we watched the second part?
Yeah. She was taken down like a major notch.
Well, as we remember, she said in the hot mic moment, "Meredith is a piece of shit. I have your back. I'm offended by that. Fuck you, that fucking piece of shit, garbage whore. I fucking hate you. She's a whore. She fucked half of New York. She can go fuck herself." Can you come back from that?
No. I mean, you can't, especially the way she was frantic. I loved watching the look in her eye and her body language, because she was frantic, because she knew she had been caught by everyone in the room. And so it's kind of like a guy who's cheating and all his mistresses are suddenly at the same party and he's trying to keep them separate.
Right.
She knew every time someone opened their mouth, they were going to reveal a lie she had said. And so she's juggling it. Oh, no, I'm your best friend. No, I was there for you. But she was lying the entire time.
Whitney said that she had been telling that same story well before that was even recorded. Do you believe that to be true?
I didn't go into this liking Whitney, but watching that episode, I'll give her the benefit of the doubt and say, yeah. I mean, because those were really like vile things that don't just pop in off the top of your head. Maybe Lisa had been whispering them to other people, you know.
Was it hard to take Whitney seriously considering she was only wearing one glove?
Yeah. That. Those outfits were atrocious. Pretty much the entire cast.
Let's talk about Meredith's outfit for one moment. What was the mindset that went into that? What was she trying to convey with that look?
Yeah, I have a question. Was that a Brooks creation or did she purchase that?
It's a good question. I can't imagine it did seem a bit like a home economics project gone wrong.
Yeah. That's what I mean. Like the fabric, the way it looked cheap. It looked like homemade, like maybe something Brooks is trying to get him from athleisure to formal wear. I don't know.
Who That's
would
a good
pay
call.
Money for that outfit? Like who would choose it unless your own flesh and blood forced you to wear it?
Why, Jenny Armstrong, who's my friend who's on OC, showed me four outfits that she had purchased for the upcoming OC reunion. And one of them had feathers on the sleeve. I said, you cannot wear that. You will look like the Lorax. It seems to me that a lot of the housewives are leaning into the feather look. Is this a little too ice capades for you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't know why they would continue doing it because it only gets made fun of. You have Jen Shaw with her. She looks like a Disney villain. I mean, that outfit is straight up from a cartoon with the purple feather collar.
She was wearing a chandelier on her tits.
Yeah. And then Meredith, throughout the season, she had that other pink feathered suit. I don't know.
It's confusing. I got the sense that Lisa had a moment where she had this realization that she's actually an employee and not a colleague.
Yeah, you had mentioned that, and it's so true. I think she thought she was like producer level, kind of the Kyle Richards of Salt Lake.
Yeah.
And I think they took her down a notch and she did not have control over the scene, over the reunion. And she was frantic.
What do you think about Mary not showing up? A good move? What would it have been like if she had been there?
I don't know how she could have stayed there how she could have shown up, because what they were going to do was attack her livelihood. And I mean, who knows, especially with things like Jen Shah and Erica, what criminal implications
good
could
point
come out.
Yeah.
Because it was, it's because the church, it's you're by attacking her church or cult, whatever it is, it's also her finances. It's Gunna's abuse allegations. I mean, it might may have been better to just walk away.
You know what this is going to end up? I'm going to predict this now. In 2 years, the Real Housewives of Reunions will just be all of their lawyers showing up.
I know, because now it's gone from lifestyle to true crime.
Absolutely. And I
mean, almost every franchise, if they don't already have a trial going on, there's someone who they cast who probably has one down the line. Salt Lake kind of flopped. No one emerged a star, and a lot of their stock went down. Like Heather, Heather Gay was supposed to be the fan favorite, and she's kind of flopped.
The beginning of the season was all about this arrest. So for everybody who loves true crime, they were amped up to see like a full-on arrest, and then it kind of petered out. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. Do I really care about, you know, a dinner party in the middle of a garden? I don't care.
It was funny with this part two of the Salt Lake reunion, because Jen Shah, who's on trial for major crimes, she was like the quiet, likable one. And she was just like sitting there to the side of Andy, and everyone else is yelling over these petty arguments. I forgot Jen Shah, the felon, sitting center stage.
Well, next episode, they're going to bring out the husbands, and he, by all means, from the clip, it makes it seem like he is asked about how much he knew about his wife's business. Do you think that he will be shitting bricks while answering that? Because I'm assuming there's an attorney behind the curtain smoking a very long cigarette with ash, concerned about what they spill.
Oh, absolutely. I hope he gets coached, because, I mean, really, with her, when you have an ongoing trial, you do have to be so careful. And, I mean, he doesn't want to end up like, he doesn't want to end up Erica Jane. Where he's implicated in his spouse's crime. So,
do you think that they're taking copious amounts of medication to stave off the anxiety before they participate in a reunion?
Yeah, who did that? Because it has been said.
I think Vicky, during that Brooks period of time, she had to have been hopped up on something to make it her way through that.
Yeah, I remember like she even nodded off, or unless that was a Ramona move. I mean,
yeah.
They were Xanaxed out. Meredith, I think, always, any scene, it doesn't have to be a reunion. I mean, you either have that or you have people like Lisa Barlow go in there raw because they're like, I need all my wits about me. I've told so many lies that I have to spin.
Well, it's a good question. I mean, when they're getting ready in those trailers, what's happening? Are they, you know, running in place a la Flashdance? I mean, how are they really prepping to walk out?
Last reunion, Beverly Hills, I think Erica took something. There were times when she was like, glassy-eyed, just like trying to roll with the punches.
You don't think that she's preparing by singing parts of her Broadway performance just to like get her vocal range up?
I'm pretty sure her life on that show is flashing before her eyes. Like, she really set herself up for this downfall.
I always feel like you know great behind-the-scenes stories. Is there one thing that we should know about Miami or Salt Lake City about the filming of it, or what happens outside of filming that we would love to know?
Salt Lake in particular, they troll Twitter. I mean, you could see people give updates. I see every day who's been blocked by who. Like, they really, my dream was to get blocked by Mary Cosby just because she was doing it to everyone. And I was like, why not me? I love when housewives block me. I say an angel gets its wings. But no, they're on Twitter a lot because a lot of franchises of the cast have moved, they're Instagram focused. But Salt Lake is always reading Twitter, reading through the hashtags, engaging.
What does that say about them that they are choosing Twitter as their platform?
I like Twitter better. I think you get more feedback instead of fanfare. So they really want to craft their images into what the fans will like. Twitter, you could just drop in on conversations and see feedback.
Interesting.
It's like a focus group. It's like market research.
It's like market research. Well, tell everybody where they can listen to your absolutely hilarious show. I love you. I love your co-host. It's a fantastic show.
Oh, thank you. It's the Pretty Corrupt podcast on Storic Media. And we are, you could follow us on Instagram at Pretty Corrupt Podcast and Twitter at Pretty Corrupt One. And also find us on storicmedia.com.
I want to thank my great guests, Jordan Ross Myers and Rory Kennedy, and remind you to click subscribe, leave a 5-star review, join the Facebook group to talk about this episode and others. And there are plenty of things to talk about this week with so many great options in TV and in streaming. Go to Facebook and put in Reality Life with KKC. Join me with discussion about all of these segments and what you're watching this week on Twitter at Kate Casey. I tweet about shows and during shows all week long. You can find me on Instagram at Kate Casey CA, where you can see what I'm watching during the week and see that must watch list that I put out every week. Every single Monday, you will get my must watch list at katecasey.substack.com. It is free. You sign up, you get a newsletter every Monday right in your email box. It serves as a great guide for you each week on what to watch in reality shows, docuseries, and documentaries. You can find me on Cameo at Kate Casey. And finally, you can get bonus episodes, extra episodes, if you go to Patreon, patreon.com/KateCasey. Hoping that you have a great week and know that this week I will also be covering the abduction, the faked abduction, I should say, of Sherry Papini. So circle back with me on Friday.
Welcome to the small town of Chinook, where faith runs deep and secrets run deeper. In this new thriller, available exclusively on Wondery Plus, religion and crime collide when a gruesome murder rocks the isolated Montana community. Everyone is quick to point their fingers at a drug-addicted teenager, but local deputy Ruth Vogel isn't convinced. She suspects connections to a powerful religious group. Enter federal agent V.B. Loreau, who has been investigating a local church for possible criminal activity. The pair form an unlikely partnership to catch the killer, unearthing secrets that leave Ruth torn between her duty to the law, her religious convictions, and her very own family. But something more sinister than murder is afoot, and someone is watching Ruth. With an all-star cast led by Emmy nominee Sanaa Lathan and Star Wars Kelly Marie Tran, Chinook is available exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.